Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Back in on the drive. Congratulations on getting through your 9-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is the drive. Carrington Harrison here. Brandon Kiley here. Brad Fanning here. Taking you up until 6 o'clock. Well, today at 2 o'clock, we announced a really cool prize. I would tell you guys to listen tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You have a really cool prize to give away.
Yeah, it is. We're giving away, we're giving you a code word every day at 2 o'clock. The guys over at Santa Fe Auto Sound are amazing. So what we're doing is we gave away a code word at 2 o'clock today. We got a code word tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Wednesday at 2 o'clock, Thursday at 2 o'clock. And then on Friday, you call in, fourth caller, 913-576-7610. And if you know all four of those code words, you want a $400 prize package to Santa Fe Auto Sound, your home for car audio since 1967. You can use it on a remote car starter. You want to upgrade your audio, whatever you want, $400. So I'm real, it makes me even more proud to be associated with those guys. They got a great local business. They've been there for a long, long time. And they want to take care of a listener here on 610 Sports Radio. So again, be listening tomorrow right at 2 o'clock for the code word.
I'm going to go ahead and tell people the code word now. Maybe they were listening at 2 o'clock. Alliance is the code word. So go ahead and write it down, Alliance. You got to be listening tomorrow at 2 o'clock. At some point, you got to be listening at 2 o'clock because you can't win if you don't listen at 2 o'clock. So do us a favor and listen tomorrow at 2 o'clock. This is kind of how the show breaks down. We have four listeners at 2 o'clock. We have 7 at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We have 9 in the 4 o'clock hour. And then 11. Yeah, people get in the car and listen to the show, it's 11. You know what I mean?
Double digits, man.
So that's why I'm trying to give people a couple. Yeah, no, I'm trying to give the extra, you know, 7 people that listen at 5 o'clock.
So the code word?
I'm trying to give them a chance.
The first one, Alliance. So there we go. We gave it away a couple of times.
And you 7 people that are listening now, try to listen tomorrow at 2.
At 2.
And that'll help out.
Then you get the second code
word. We're hoping that this giveaway can get us to 6 people at 2 o'clock. You guys don't know.
To 7?
We might actually get a bonus to 7 people listening at 2 o'clock. It'll actually be pretty magical.
That would be nice.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about in today's show. KU, they got a must-win game. Kareem Hunt back. A lot of stuff happening, BK.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Hits are brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city. Now open in the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. If you missed it earlier, it is official. The Cleveland Browns have signed former Chiefs running back Kareem Hunt.
My understanding, what he wanted was to sign with the team before the investigation into his three incidents of misconduct were concluded by the NFL. Commissioner Roger Goodell came out during Super Bowl week and said it would be concluded soon. That meant that Kareem Hunt and his people were essentially on the clock.
That's Ian Rappaport of NFL Network earlier today. According to Adam Schefter, the deal is worth just about $1 million for 1 year with the Browns. The question for you guys, does it surprise you at all that he signed this quickly and that he signed specifically with the Browns?
I think if we had put two and two together a couple weeks ago, we would have came to the conclusion that Kareem Hunt was only going to sign with one of three places. He was either going to sign in Chicago with Matt Nagy, he was either going to sign in Philadelphia with Doug Peterson, or John Dorsey was going to take the chance. I don't think it was going to be an organization that did not have prior history with Kareem Hunt. Think about all the smoke over the last couple weeks. It was all former Chiefs people. That I think it makes a lot of sense why John Dorsey would sign him. He drafted him. He's also from the area. When you put two and two together, it makes a lot of sense why this news came out.
Yeah, I thought for sure it was going to be Chicago, but you're right, C. Dot. We should have connected the dots a long time ago. John Dorsey's the guy that drafted and developed him and scouted him. So it makes sense that he ends up in Cleveland. Now, you know, the part of this thing is that two of his incidents happened in the Cleveland area. The one that we're seeing on all over ESPN today is the video from TMZ in the hallway where he pushed and kicked the girl. So, yeah, he's in Cleveland. It could go one of two ways. He's back with a lot of people that he's familiar with and he grew up with, and the behavior continues, or he takes advantage of the second chance, and actually uses it. So, yeah, John Dorsey snagging Kareem Hunt, should have seen it coming a mile away.
Two.
second hit of the day. Today is a borderline must-win game for Kansas, in part because of what K-State did over the weekend.
Coming into the season, I knew they were turning everybody Elite 18. I mean, it's a team that not only win a Big 12, but can win a national championship because you don't normally return that kind of experience with that kind of talent.
That was Bryce Drew after K-State's win in Waco on Saturday. If K-State does not pick up its second conference road win of the year, is it officially K-State's conference to lose at that point?
Yeah, I think you got to say that right now. I mean, not many times I think you can say at this point in the season that I think a team is better than KU in the Big 12. Man, Kansas State is just better than them. I was having a little bit of Twilight Zone. I thought this was going to be the Saturday that the other contenders to the Big 12 kind of fall back and then KU wins, and then they're just kind of lurking in the bushes there. But you got to give K-State a lot of credit for going on the road and beating a tournament team in Baylor. We just saw the committee put out their mock bracket, the little projection for it. Joe Lunardi has eight teams from the Big 12 making the NCAA tournament. So going on the road, any team in the conference is a big-time win. Got to give K-State a lot of credit. Have to say right now, I don't think it's close. K-State is the best basketball team in the Big 12.
Yeah, the thing that separates K-State from KU is that they're the same team on the road that they are at home. And you look at turnovers, and it tells you the entire story. It's basically the same for K-State. With KU, it's not. They're a terrible basketball team when it comes to turning the basketball over on the road. So two things need to happen if KU is going to win this game and stay in the Big 12 race. First off, Quentin Grimes needs to step up and give me double digits. Second off, KU needs to keep their turnovers to 10-11 where they normally are at Allen Fieldhouse. If that happens, they win at TCU tonight and stay in the race.
Three.
Third hit of the day. Prior to the Kareem Hunt news, the big NFL news of the day was actually Kyler Murray, who officially decided to declare for the NFL draft.
The NFL draft just became infinitely more exciting because he's, you know, as electric of a football player that's come out in years. Maybe, you know, I know Saquon last year, but Reggie Bush type of hype and electricity, and I want to see this guy in a football field. It's very, very good news for the NFL.
That's Dan Orlovsky earlier today on the Stephen A. Smith Show. Carrington's face is really just priceless right now. A question I was going to ask you.
Is he talking about the same Kyler Murray that we just... What? He's the most exciting player entering since Reggie Bush.
He's excited about him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, not at all, actually, is the answer.
What is the dream scenario for where you guys would like to see Kyler play next year?
The Dolphins. I think the Dolphins make a lot of sense for Kyler Murray.
Really?
Yeah, the Dolphins make a lot of sense.
Why?
I mean, I don't want him in Oakland. I don't want him in Denver. Yeah. Get him as far away from that as possible. Yeah.
Oh, you're looking at it through
the Dolphins. The Dolphins make sense. Yeah, the Dolphins are fine.
Man, I should be more excited for this as a short man who gets discriminated against from a heightist everywhere. I should be really excited for a guy like Kyler Murray. I just don't see how he's going to win in the NFL. I really don't. I mean, I looked this up. The average height, and this was 3 years ago, of an offensive lineman in the NFL is 6'5 and 312. Kyler Murray might be listed at 5'11, but he's not. Trust me. And Doug Flutie was listed at 5'10. Trust me, he's not. I took a pee next to him in the press box at Northern Illinois for a Northern Illinois Toledo game. And I was about the same size as Doug Flutie, and I'm 5'6". Granted, he's got the mullet going, and I don't have any hair, but he's not much taller than me. And Kyler Murray is not taller than Doug Flutie. So I would agree with this with Orlovsky. He's an exciting player to watch. But I don't think it's going to work in the NFL. I don't. I give the kid all the credit in the world. I give him all the credit in the world for following his heart and doing what he wants to do. I think that's exactly what he should do. But I don't think Kyler Murray makes it in the NFL.
I think Kyler Murray is going to be a top 10 pick. I think you got to think about it like this. It's always going to be in the back of the mind. If Kyler Murray doesn't get drafted where he wants to get drafted, he can always just go play baseball. So if you really want Kyler Murray to be your quarterback, you have to draft him in the top 10, probably the top 15, to make it work for him financially. He can say he's fully committed to the NFL. Let Kyler Murray get drafted 31st overall, and then we'll test how committed you are to playing football. I think a team actually goes up to go get him. I think Kyler Murray goes top 10.
You think? Would you take Kyler Murray over Drew Lock?
I wouldn't, no.
I wouldn't either. Yeah, I mean, I almost hope he goes. I hope he lands in the AFC West because I don't think he's going to work in the NFL as a quarterback.
I mean, he certainly ain't playing no other position if you don't play quarterback.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
you think he's going to play wide receiver? I think he's going to play baseball if that's the case.
Yeah, maybe.
Final hit of the day is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city. Now opening the Crossroads and the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. On Saturday, we all, other than Carrington, seemed to watch this startup football league called...
I watched it.
On Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I watched it on Sunday. I didn't watch it on Saturday.
Luis Perez and the Birmingham Iron pitch the shutout on opening day, 26-0.
That was the final call via CBS. Saturday, more people watched the AAF than a nationally televised game between James Harden and Russell Westbrook. The big question that I think is the big question for the AAF, do you think these ratings are going to be sustainable moving forward?
Hell no. That was the only game they're going to have on CBS. See, we got to tell the full story here. That whenever they moved the game to NFL Network, you got a .04. So y'all wasn't that interested in the AFL. I legitimately think I'm always going to call it the AAFL.
It's the Alliance, man. You got to get down with the Alliance.
I legitimately think you guys are pulling my leg. These were the scores of the four AAF games. 26-0, 38-22, 40-6, 15-6. So on Saturday, the day you guys are telling me this was so much fun and I enjoyed it, you guys enjoyed a 15-6 football game? You guys enjoyed a 40-6 football game? All right, come on now. You guys are lying here. Just say, I'm happy there's more football and I'll watch whatever they get me. I'm not even expecting it to be the NFL. It's not my complaint. This wasn't even good MIAA football. This wasn't MAC football. You guys are telling me on a Saturday night you stayed in and watched a 15-6 football game. I'm not believing you. I'm calling shenanigans here.
I did.
Absolute shenanigans.
I'll tell you how I got hooked right out of the gate, man. Some dude from the San Antonio Commanders absolutely blew up the San Diego Fleet's quarterback. Helmet under the chin. Helmet went flying. Pounded him into the turf. And guess what happened, C-Dot? No penalty flag. You saw some pretty good hits. And they got some stuff that got my attention. They got a camera on the replay official up in the booth. You hear the entire conversation between the replay official and the official on the field. There were certain things like that that got my attention. Steve Spurrier, coach of the Orlando Apollos. You had my former Nebraska Cornhusker coach, Mike Riley, coach in San Antonio. You had Mike Martz coaching the San Diego Fleet. There were some things that had my attention. I'm not going there for NFL quality football.
I don't know about you guys. I ain't watching football to watch people coach. I don't. Maybe y'all different
than
me.
The big hit.
I don't know.
You didn't even. The hit was unbelievable. They're not throwing flags. You can actually hit people in this league.
It was a 15-6 football game that you guys are trying to tell me.
I haven't seen a hit like that
in
the NFL in 5 years.
That you guys are trying to tell
me. Akeem Hunt is the leading rusher after 1 week.
Former Chief.
75 yards rushing.
That's what you guys are trying to tell me.
Gavin Escobar played a lot too.
Two of those games, neither team threw a touchdown pass.
Wasn't there like a
you guys are lying, bro.
Wasn't Devontae Busby, wasn't he he was a Chief for a while. I saw him.
I can't
cup of coffee.
Trent Richardson. Can't imagine hating the NBA so much that you're trying to sell the AAF as entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Hey, if you don't want to watch the NBA, that's perfectly fine. If you, next time you want to watch an AAF game, tweet me and I'll give you something better to watch on Netflix. That's it. That's going to be my new service to you, the listener. If you're thinking about watching the AAF, tweet me and I'll give you something better to watch. I just watched the what did I watch?
Documentary?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I watched.
Ted Bundy?
Never mind.
The fire one?
Ted Bundy.
Oh.
Abducted in plain sight. I'm watching that Russian doll. I'll give you something to watch on Netflix, but keep this 15-6 football completely away from me.
You're going to miss out on Memphis Express.
What about the
99 passing yards they had on
Saturday?
Dude,
what about the Arizona Hotshots, 38-22 of the Salt Lake Stallions in a shootout?
You guys are trying to sell Christian Hackenberg as good, exciting football. That's what you guys are trying to do.
But John Wolford, four touchdown passes. John Wolford, that's the pride of the Arizona Hotshots.
All right, we've talked about the AAF way longer than we should be talking about. 15-6 football games and 40-6 football games.
Don't be bagging on my Orlando Apollos.
You guys are trying to call great football. So Kareem Hunt signed a 1-year deal today with the Cleveland Browns for $1 million. This is the thing. Because, as we talked about in the hits, I think we always realized that he was going to sign in a situation that people were familiar with him, whether it was John Dorsey, who was the general manager during his time in Kansas City that drafted and scouted him, whether it was Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator, or Doug Peterson. This is the thing that I originally came into it thinking. This sounds bad. This sounds really bad to me for one reason. At least of the incidents that we know with Kareem Hunt. Maybe there's more, maybe there's not. But we know there's three separate incidents. Whether it was the incident in Mosaic after the Chiefs postseason loss to the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the incident at the hotel. Whether it was the incident 4th of July where he punched that guy. Two of his three incidents happened in the Cleveland area. Are you sure that he can handle being in that environment? Because the Browns just put an investment that they're right. That, hey, he's going through treatment. We got the support system here. Being in a familiar place, that's good for him. This is very similar to my stance on Adoree Green Beckham. Because I remember a lot of people in Kansas City want Adoree Green Beckham. And I was saying is, I want Doriel as far away from Springfield, Missouri as possible. I don't want him in St. Louis. I don't want him in Kansas City. Go to Seattle somewhere. Go to New England somewhere. But being within driving distance where your friends can come up here, where you can go up there, sound absolutely bad. Now, we saw with Adoree Green Beckham that just trouble was going to find you anywhere. It didn't matter if you were in Tennessee. It didn't matter if you were in Philadelphia. You were just going to get in trouble. That's just kind of who you were. And maybe hopefully when you're out of the league, you learn from it. I have no clue what's going to happen with Kareem Hunt. Maybe going back home, being near his mom, being near his dad, being near his grandparents, being near whatever his support system is, maybe that ends up being a good thing for him. But I do think it's a fair question to ask because a lot of people have got this text before. You're at home, bored, nothing to do. Your friends hit you up at 11:30. Hey, what are you doing? Let's go out tonight. That happens in a lot of situations. Is Kareem Hunt going to have the self-discipline to say, no, I'm staying in tonight? Is he going to have the self-discipline on a Tuesday when they have the off day to not go out drinking with his friends? I think you have put him, whatever percentage chance it was going to be for Kareem Hunt to get back in the league and get that second chance. I find it hard to believe that it is not harder being in Cleveland than it would be harder being in Buffalo or harder being in Jacksonville or harder being in Chicago or harder being in Philadelphia, a place far away from a lot of the people that he got in trouble with.
I think it's going to be tough no matter where he goes, C-Dot, to be honest with you. And especially in a place like Buffalo when it's all about, what, the Sabres and the Buffalo Bills, that's it. And in Cleveland, he's probably the – popular is the wrong word, but the most recognizable person in the city of Cleveland right now. Because, again, I've told you guys this. I lived around that area for almost 10 years. They love the Browns. They love their pro football. And this is all anybody's talking about in that city. It wouldn't surprise me if the local news spent 15 minutes on this story right out of the gate. Kareem Hunt's not going to be able to go anywhere without anybody knowing about it in Cleveland. Won't happen. I don't know if he's going to succeed or not. I'm just glad it's not in Kansas City. Because I didn't want him back here. I mean, here's what's going to happen, though. Once the suspension comes down from the NFL, the investigation gets concluded, whatever. And it's, I don't know if it's going to be 6 games, 10 games, 12 games, whatever. You know what's going to happen? The first time it's a tight game and Kareem Hunt runs for a 32-yard, scores a touchdown, and breaks the tie, you know what's going to happen in Cleveland? Stadium's going to erupt, and they're going to go crazy, and they're going to cheer. I mean, it's the same thing that Ryan Wilkowski put that poll up on Fesco in the Morning last week about Kareem Hunt. Would you want him back in Kansas City? And 71% of the people said yes, which to me is crazy and ridiculous. But that's what will happen. If he gets on the field in Cleveland, if he keeps his nose clean, and he goes out there and he plays well, nobody will care. At least, well, maybe nobody's strong, but the majority of people will not care.
Now, you could also argue from the other side, as I do think you got to give the conversation a little bit of balance.
Yeah, I mean, which drives me nuts, by the way.
That maybe going to Cleveland is good for him. Being close to your mom, being close to your support system. And I think if you could pick any city, any fan base that maybe would be more accepting of Kareem Hunt, mm-hmm. it would be Cleveland. You brought up a really good point about Darren Sproles. Let's say it was Darren Sproles in this exact same scenario. 23 years old, 24 years mm-hmm. old. You saw him play at K-State. He went to school in the area.
Yeah, knew him growing up.
A portion of Chiefs fans would be very accepting of Darren Sproles. Hey,
he's our guy.
I can vouch for him. I grew up with him. He was in my second grade class. We went to high school together. I vouch for the character of this being a one-time incident, and we're going to put our protection around him. It takes a village type mentality. That certainly would happen if it was a local person. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe the Browns are playing off the, he's close here, he's back home. Of any PR people, it's easier to sell them to. Toledo grew up here in the area, not far from here. That has to be the selling point for the Browns to try to make this work. I disagree with you a little bit when it comes to, I guess, the credibility you have. Because I think for some people, you say, hey, put this on me. I think this is a John Dorsey call. I don't think this is a Freddie Kitchens call. I don't think this is a Haslam call. I think John Dorsey said...
Well, Haslam's got to sign off on this. No way the owner agreed. Lets John Dorsey do this.
Agreed, but I think that the Browns have been so bad in just reading. Again, I read one story from from a Seth Wickersham, but it came off like, hey, we've had a big argument about who controls power here. It's going to be a traditional owner, general manager, coach. I don't think Freddie Kitchens made this call. I think Dorsey went to his owner and said, I'll vouch for his character. You put this on me. You have trusted me to put together the best football team possible. I think he's somebody that can help us win. We can sign him for $1 million right now. We'll bring him in. We can put through the suspension. He'll be under my care. He'll put this on my watch. That I do think similar to what happened in Kansas City. Part of, I think, why people want to bring Kareem Hunt back is we saw how successful it was for Tyreek Hill. Whether you disagree with the signing at the beginning or not, the Chiefs took a chance on Tyreek Hill. No one would deny that it has worked overwhelmingly for the Chiefs.
Sure.
That the next time Dorsey or, I guess, Brett Veach makes that decision, the next time Reed makes that decision, they will have a case study to point to. Look, this is the exact same situation that happened with Tyreek Hill. We're going to do everything in our power. That I think the city would be much more accepting because of how successful it was. Think of something happened with Tyreek Hill 7 weeks into it. I don't know if you ever go down that road again.
Of course not.
That I think Dorsey is kind of putting a little bit of his word on the line, a little bit of his overall reputation, and he is vouching for the character of Kareem Hunt. That we can talk about second chances. You don't get three.
Mm-mm.
If this doesn't work for Kareem Hunt in a situation in Cleveland, he is never playing in the NFL again. For whatever reason, I don't know what happens. Dorsey said zero tolerance policy. For whatever reason, if it does not work from an off-the-field standpoint in Cleveland, Kareem Hunt will not be in the NFL after the Browns.
I think Dorsey also see that. He's got plenty of political capital build up in Cleveland right now to be able to pull this off. I mean, I think this would be a completely different situation if the Browns were 1-15, Baker Mayfield was a bust, and you had to fire your coach and your offensive coordinator midway through the season. None of this would work. There's no way that Dorsey could go out and do this. But you won seven games, you think you found your franchise quarterback, and you got a head coach that's going to sit that works well with Baker Mayfield. You got this thing going in the right direction, and you have the ability, if you're wrong on this, now Dorsey will still take some heat if Kareem has another incident for sure. But now, at the very least, he's buffered by what he's done in year one in Cleveland. I mean, for sure. Like, if you got a GM on the hot seat, no way in heck they're pulling the trigger on this deal. No way in heck they're putting themselves on the line and risking their job for this. Dorsey can do it because Cleveland's going in the right direction.
I want to play this for you. This is from Lewis Riddick. I think the theme for this deal is going to be trust. Dorsey is trusting that in his care, in his city, in their organization, they can help turn Kareem Hunt around. Lewis Riddick spoke to that earlier today on ESPN.
Yeah, John Dorsey has a relationship with him. Brett Veach had a relationship with him. The general manager in Kansas City, Andy Reid, had a relationship with him. Matt Nagy had a relationship with him. And it is a relationship business, but it's also a trust business. And he's going to have to prove that he can be trusted, not just on the football field, but to make good decisions off the field, which is why he is where he is now. You think the Chiefs really wanted to get rid of him? No, they didn't. They couldn't trust him.
That was Lewis Riddick. I want to play for you guys what Ian Rappaport had to say, and he kind of echoed the same thoughts, that this is a move about trust.
John Dorsey has known Kareem Hunt. He was integral in drafting Kareem Hunt. This relationship certainly will carry him through. And Dorsey himself has taken some risks on players. He's trusted in, one, what he sees on film, which, of course, for Kareem Hunt is really not a question. But the character he sees in people, what he knows, his relationship with them, he did it in drafting Marcus Peters, who's become a fantastic NFL player with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now he's done it. We did it with the drafting of Kareem Hunt. Now with the signing of Kareem Hunt on his new team, based on what he knows of the person and how they can manage the different issues that he's battling, that is what John Dorsey is banking on. And
Dorsey also drafted Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That I disagree with it. That I think that organizations like Cleveland, organizations like the Chiefs, they, to me, owe the city a higher moral standard and should set the tone for it. But people disagree, and that's perfectly fine. Reasonable minds can disagree on a topic like this. But I think we've seen that Dorsey does not care about your public outrage and is going to field the best team possible. That he might talk about that high moral fiber and all that kind of stuff. John Dorsey is a football guy, and if he can go out there and sign the best football players possible, that's what he's going to do. I think we've seen that time and time again, whether it's drafting Tyreek Hill, when a lot of the league wouldn't give Tyreek Hill a chance, Dorsey went there and did it. When it came to Kareem Hunt, which maybe a lot of teams wouldn't do it. Because I'm guessing is, if you're Kareem Hunt and his management team, you thought this was the best deal possible. A team that already has an established number one running back in Nick Chubb, and a team that signs you a one-year, $1 million deal. It tells me that there wasn't going to be this big-time bidding war for you.
Yeah.
That if you had waited 3 weeks, you were not holding out for a two-year, $8 million deal from the Philadelphia Eagles or a two-year, $10 million deal from the Bears. That this was the best deal that you had, so you had to take it. You got a one-year, $1 million deal, which we all agree on a football standpoint, regardless of what you think about what Kareem Hunt did.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Is a steal for Kareem Hunt. Everybody in the NFL would sign a one-year, $1 million deal on a player like him.
You got last year's leading rusher for $1 million for 1 year. Yeah, it's an absolute steal.
And you could also argue, if you want to talk about from a football standpoint, if the Browns are good, like many people think they're going to be, you add Kareem Hunt the last 6 weeks of the season, the last 8 weeks of the season, a guy hungry, trying to prove something, happy with that second chance, fresh legs because he didn't play into last season, didn't play the beginning of this season. Like, if you're talking about it purely from a football move, this is a great move for the Cleveland Browns. But to me, Dorsey has shown time and time again that, again, you might want to hold NFL teams to these high moral standards. John Dorsey does not care about that. Dorsey is about fielding the best 53-man roster possible, and Kareem Hunt's part of that.
And I think most NFL teams are that way. Now, they'll come out and they'll say, hey, listen, you know, we trust him, we believe in him, blah, 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 blah. And they're going to say that, and a lot of people are going to believe it. But they're going to roll the dice on guys with shady backgrounds. You have to in the NFL. That's part of it. You have to do it in all pro sports, really. And so, yeah, they want to put the most talented football team on the field in Cleveland. And John Dorsey did that today. I just don't want him back at Kansas City. I believe in second chances big time. You know, I wouldn't have taken a second chance on Kareem Hunt, not here in Kansas City for sure. But if Hunt gets it turned around and Dorsey rolls the dice on him and it works, then good for Kareem and good for the Browns.
I mean, somebody was always going to do it. It just happened to be the person that knows him better than anybody, the person that scouted him when he was coming out of Toledo. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get to the other big story of the day. Is tonight a must-win game for Kansas? We'll talk about it coming up. It's The Drive. Later tonight at 8 o'clock, KU has a very important game against the TCU Horned Frogs. I think it's a must win. Now, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm intrigued by that because not very often, I would say over the last 15 years, have I gone into a game thinking, you know what? KU has to win today. A lot of times it'd be like, it'd be nice if KU wins today. And part of me enjoys the not knowing if they're going to win or not. I have no clue what's going to happen today. Yeah. I don't think KU is winning today. I don't think KU is a good team on the road. I don't think they are a consistent team on the road. I don't think they have enough good players to expect to go on the road and beat a dangerous team. TCU is kind of one of those teams that's, you know, going to be a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament, probably win their first game. Just a sneaky team, a team that can win in any environment. They just won Saturday at Iowa State, who we can agree after KU is probably the most difficult environment to win in the Big 12. So this is no slouch game here with TCU. I think TCU is certainly more than capable of beating KU. Let's start with this. The biggest thing that I think KU needs to clean up today is the turnovers. KU, when it comes to these road games, has not done a very good job of protecting the basketball. At home, KU averages 10 turnovers a game. Nothing wrong with that. On the road, 17.6 turnovers a game for KU. That's a huge problem for this team. That you got young, inexperienced guards. I think it was in the game against K-State. They turned the ball over on 21% of their possessions.
Yeah, they had 23 turnovers that game.
On 21% of their possessions. That's a problem. One of every five times you come down the court, that's not counting missed shots, not counting make shots. It's not. You turn the basketball over. Man, it's hard to go on the road and expect to win conference games when you're turning the ball over at the pace of what KU wants to do. You want to talk about anything? I would say above Grimes scoring, above you getting some from Mitch Lightfoot, above KJ Lawson, you got to protect and value the basketball tonight. If this KU team's going to turn the ball over 19 times today, 20 times today, the way they did against K-State, I don't think you win today. And you probably lose by double digits, the exact same way you lost to K-State.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference. They're a different basketball team at home, and they turn it over almost eight times more on the road than they do at home. And that's what's cost them. You know, I went back and I looked at – we were looking this up today. I think BK looked up the road turnovers for KU before the show today. And I got curious about K-State. I'm like, what's the difference between the first-place team of the Big 12 and KU? And it's basically this. K-State is the same team on the road – in terms of taking care of the basketball, as they are at home.
K-State's got senior guards. KU doesn't.
Absolutely. They've got, and that's the other part of it. They've got experience. And the biggest thing when it comes to experience is, man, you got to be able to adapt to change in different situations, in adverse situations. Barry Brown and Dean Wade have done it. Kamau Stokes has done it. Xavier Sneed has done it. That old crew of K-State has done it. I mean, Bill Self started four freshmen for what, like the second time since, I don't know when, 2013, something like that?
Whole time.
Yeah.
He's been there.
He started four freshmen against Oklahoma State, and it took them a while to get rolling. They don't have experience. They don't have experience, and they're awfully young. That's what's going to be tough tonight.
But we say that, though, is, and this is the first time I think we've been able to say this to a long time. I legitimately don't know how talented KU is. Like, I don't know how talented they are. That game on Saturday, Mm-hmm. Only they have three offensive weapons. Three. You might like Grimes. He had two shots in the game. Like, I'm not overselling Quentin Grimes over the course of 40 minutes, a guy who we thought could be a one-and-done guy, a guy who's a projected lottery pick coming into the season, hit two shots in that game, and in the first half was terrible. Who do you trust? Let's say in this game today, mm-hmm. let's say that Dotson picks up two quick ones in this game. Who are you trusting to fill in the offense from him? Because in that game against Oklahoma State, KU had three guys that could score. Diedrich's going to get his. Abaji should be able to score. Let's see how it translates to the road, but I like Abaji. And then you have Dotson. Quinn Grimes had 6 points in that game. Mitch Lightfoot had 6 points in this game. KJ Lawson played 11 minutes and had 2 points in this game. Charlie Moore has 2 points. I just don't know in this game. If you get into a little bit of foul trouble or it's on the road, I don't know who you can expect outside of your top three guys to give you any level of offense. I don't have that faith. We can talk about experience with K-State and all. Yeah. K-State just has better players than KU does. Iowa State maybe has better players than KU does. Now, I understand why K-State does or KU doesn't have the talent. Udoka's not there. Silvio's not there. Marcus Garrett isn't there. I understand why KU isn't as talented as they have been in years past. I'm saying is right now, if I had to ask you who's KU's fourth best player, who is it, Quentin Grimes? Quentin Grimes is their fourth best player. He hasn't scored or he scored double digits one time in the last 10 games for them. That's a huge drop off when you talk about production.
He's not their fourth best scorer for sure, but he needs to be. And I think that's the difference. And yeah, he had two threes and had 6 points in that Oklahoma State game, but it wasn't an early three and it wasn't a late three in garbage time that didn't matter. Quentin Grimes came down and he hit two big threes. And he had an assist to Abaji and a huge run that blew the game open. I don't know if Quentin Grimes is going to go out there tonight and light the world on fire. More than likely, it's not based on the way that he's played over the last few weeks. But
I don't think you need him to light. I don't
just hear me out on this. I think he has the ability to go out there and have a big game. I think that what he did in the Oklahoma State game is a start. It's a start to get the kid's confidence back. You know, it's not that he doesn't have talent. It's not he's playing well. He didn't have confidence. He went out there and he had two big threes that helped blow the game open. You know, okay, we got something here. Maybe. Now, I will say this. If Grimes doesn't come out and start playing like the type of recruit that he was when he came to Kansas, KU didn't have a chance to win the Big 12 title. Not with Azubuike out, not with Silvio not eligible, and not with Marcus Garrett hurt as well. And it's not going to happen.
Plus Vic, too.
And plus Vic, you're right. And Gerald Vic's not playing with him right now. So they don't have a shot unless Quentin Grimes steps up. I actually have a little faith in the kid to go out there and do it because he had a couple of shots in big spots in that game. Now, maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I'm just not overselling. The kid played 30 minutes and had 6 points, and I'm just not spinning that as somebody that turned things around. Let me ask you this because you appear to be way higher on Quentin Grimes than I am. These are the last 10 games for Quentin Grimes. 6-6-6-3-13 at Kentucky. Played well. 0-8-6-7-5. I'll set the over-under for Quentin Grimes at 7.5.
Yeah, I'll take the over. I think he's going to have a good game tonight. Because KU doesn't have a chance. They don't have a choice. He has to have a good game tonight. And I think KU's going to win tonight on the road at TCU.
I mean, if he has 10 points in this game, they win.
Yeah. And I don't think that's asking a whole lot out of Quentin Grimes. Is to get 10 points out of the kid.
Based on what we've seen so far this season, I think asking 10 points of Quentin Grimes is asking a lot.
We've also seen really good Quentin Grimes. Not as much as bad Quentin Grimes, but we saw him put 21 on Michigan State, 13 on Kentucky. And this is a do-or-die game on Big Money on ESPN. This is a time for the kid to rise up.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly would be a time for the kid to rise up. I just don't really have the confidence in him to go out there and do it. I kind of felt like Saturday was going to be the day.
And I understand that. I understand why you don't have confidence in him, too. I'm not down on you because of that, because I certainly understand it. I just feel like I'm seeing something.
I just don't see a lot of things that the kid does incredibly well. Like, I look at Abaji. To me, Abaji has a great ability to get to the basket. I think about Dotson with his speed in the open court. Yeah. What does Grimes do really well? Yeah. I don't know what he does really well. He can't create his own shot. He's not really using his athleticism. Like, he's just not really doing a whole lot. He's not a great defender. He's not getting blocks. He's not getting rebounds. He's not hitting open jump shots. I mean, the kid's just not really doing a whole lot here. I don't want to pile on the kid, but I think you've got to hold him to a different standard. When you were the 8th overall recruit, that if you knew nothing about KU, and then I showed you Abaji, and then I showed you Dotson, and then I showed you Grimes, and then I said, pick the kid who was the number 8 recruit in his class last year. I don't know how you would identify Quentin Grimes to be that player.
No, you wouldn't.
You'd probably say it was Abaji.
No, you wouldn't.
Just based on his athleticism. And then Dotson's certainly playing better than he is right now. Like, part of the KU problem that they're in right now is that Quentin Grimes is playing like, I feel like the way we talk about Grimes is kind of how we talk about Mitch Lightfoot. Well, you know, if he can hit a couple shots and kind of give you some energy points and all that stuff and kind of get his confidence up.
That can't be the way Quentin Grimes plays. KU gets beat if he's that guy. Quentin Grimes has to play like a star, or at least get close to that point. And he hadn't done that for a long time. So I'm with you on that. I feel like in the situation that he hit those big threes against Oklahoma State may be the thing to kind of get him going in the right direction. That's all I'm saying.
You got KU winning today.
I do. I think KU's going to beat TCU.
This is the first time you've shown confidence in KU all basketball.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to come out there and get it done tonight. Their back's against the wall. Because let's face it, early in the season, they could play bad. They could lose on the road. And their back's not really against the wall. It is tonight. Like, you're on the road at TCU, and you really don't have a choice if you want to keep that streak alive. So I think those guys will come out and play their guts out. And let's not forget, TCU, they're coming off a big road win over Iowa State, probably played above their skis. So I think KU gets them.
I know the people will take this as me being a Missouri fan here. Where's the fight coming from in this KU team? Because I would say to go on the road in the Big 12 against a team like TCU, mm-hmm. that's what you need.
Yeah.
You need the ability to overcome adversity. I don't know where it's coming from. But I think we've reached the point that you need best case scenario, everything to go well for KU to win on the road.
Yeah.
That you need Dotson, Abaji, and Lawson to all score at least 17 points,
yeah.
all play really well, all stay out of foul trouble. I think you're asking a lot for KU to go on the road and beat a team that I think is going to make the NCAA tournament in TCU. I'll take TCU to win this game 65-59, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I think KU is going to win this game. I'm going to say 69-62.
Check out the podcast page, 610sports.com, also available on iTunes. Do us a favor and download the radio.com app. We're off a little bit earlier today because of college basketball, but we'll be back again tomorrow with all things about KU-TCU. And I don't want to neglect K-State. They got a big game tomorrow against Texas. It's K-State. This feels good to say. Inches closer to winning the Big 12 in basketball. We'll talk about it tomorrow. It's The Drive.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.